Just another Northwoods occultist. But don't turn that dial as we explore the haunting of the Muskie Shop. Is the ghost of Dick Stimke why multiple visitors feel icky in the bathroom? All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, Spooky Jay.
Oh, Scary Steve, what's happening?
Oh, that was horribly lame. Anyway, it's spooky. Anyway, Jay, you wore the same Halloween costume this year yet again.
Oh, I dressed as a Muskie Shop employee? Is that what you're saying?
Dressed as a Muskie Shop employee.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, my costume yet again is Filthy Ramp Skank.
You went as a Muskie Guide.
No, just a Ramp Skank. I'll tell you what. Jody Michael went out in the water today.
Yeah.
I was fishing with a really cool podcaster. He came down from, he's down from Charleston, West Virginia. I'm from Huntington. And if you think there's a conflict between Palestine and Israel, Huntington and Charleston, buddy, we don't get along. But today,
I didn't know that we
mended fences and went out in the water. Yeah, Charleston sucks. But anyway,
harsh. Ouch.
No, but Jody Michael goes out, and she had what I will call a Ranger owner run-in, Jay. But just the day before, I'd also had the run-in with the same douchebag. Oh, my God. This guy, day before yesterday, I'm backing my truck in, right? And so I'm actually backing the boat in, but I'm backing in. He cuts me off, Jay. He just jams the nose of his truck behind my boat, sticks his head out the door, and yells that it's his turn. And I roll my window down. There's another dude that was in the podcast with me. I roll the window down, just mocking, you know, just didn't even make words, sort of like made sounds like the teacher from the Peanuts show.
Cartoon.
Oh man, this guy was red aced over it. He was red aced. But it was so funny. And then she calls today, and she's launching to go out and pursue the mighty Muscalunjo by herself on her on Jody Michael's power low, right? So she's got a little 18-foot low. And
the gray squirrel.
The gray squirrel. Anyway, the much-feared gray squirrel.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So she's launching, and guess who, of all people, and she described the guy, jams the boat like it's a double launch. That's fine. But the guy jams in beside her and then parks his boat on spot lock behind her boat. Like she's trying to come off the trailer and he just spot locked right behind her. So, man, I don't know. I'm just complaining. And so this guy is official. He will be at the Ranger Winter Circle at this year's Muskie Shot Bash for the
year.
Oh,
takes
man.
All kinds.
If you got a Ranger, I love you. No offense, but man, it is like, shine on you, crazy boomer. Shine on you, crazy boomer. So there's that.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. All right, here it is. Deal of the Sentra. You got the new Abu Revo Toro Rocket T3. Pair it with a shield rod, and you receive what, Jay?
$80 off the reel.
Dang.
Free shipping on everything. Free line and leader on the reel.
Wow. You're ready to get
it? Yeah, we got that going for another couple days.
That's a pretty good deal, actually. You get the rocket. You can burn it, turn it, and burn. Well, how fast is a rocket?
That's a high-speed reel. I think it's 42 inches per crank.
Wow.
That brings them in. Yeah, it picks up slack line quickly, Steve.
Oh, that's good for your big rubber.
Smooth reel. I'm going to pick one up.
Smooth reel. That's not a bad deal if you're looking for the new. Hey, do you get to pick your shield rod? How's that come on that?
Yeah. Any model you want.
See,
any model.
There you go. Not a bad little deal there.
Yep. 7-footers all the way up to 9.6s. Some telescope. Some are one piece.
There
your
go.
Choice.
Hey, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Pretty cool.
People, you're starting to think about, you know, if you got to drop some hints to the whiff. What do you want for Christmas, dear?
Start your Christmas shopping early.
I want that new mask reel. Anyway, we're talking about reels today on the boat. I mean, I like the Revo stuff. There's so many super reels anymore. I've complained about it before, but I keep coming back to the Abu. I'm right now. I'm really on this Daiwa kick. Got that TW. It's like a Cadillac, Jay. I've said it in video.
Yeah, the gray TW. They're really great.
But you're going to pay Cadillac prices on that. But it's worth it if you got Cadillac money. If you got a
it's only a couple bucks more than a Tranq's 400, really.
Yeah, if you got your monocle, you know. You break out your Mr. Peanut or your Monopoly monocle.
Oh, you break out the Ascot.
The Ascot. I fish solely in an Ascot. Well, $359. What's a Tranq's right now? 319. Wow, I'm sorry, folks. Sometimes I get scared and I read these numbers and, man, talk about in inflation. What a different world. But, yeah, not that bad. But I was talking reels today. I really think about reels. I would just sort of get to this point with reels where I don't think there's a bad one anymore. You know, it's like comparatively to what we had 5 years ago or what we had 10 years ago, it's a joke, you know. And so,
yeah,
it really is. I mean,
you think about all the new ones that would come out that would have a serious issue, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd basically recall them in 6 months.
Right.
You know, you'd never see that happening anymore.
No, everybody's pretty much got it rock solid. I mean, it's like I don't think the Tranq's 300 or 400 or the 5 has changed much lately. Daiwa, you know, they did the T bar. You know, you got that. It's just interesting. I was just thinking about that today, where there's not like a dog anymore. There's not like a kind of reel. I was impressed. I've said it before. Do we still have them? I'm looking here. The pin.
What's that?
The pin stuff.
Yeah, the
squall.
The squall and the
fathom.
Fathom. Yeah, they still make them. Yeah, we still carry them.
I mean, it's just been...
make them. They just came out really
right,
a year ago.
Yeah, well, you never know. So I was just looking here, but...
Yeah.
You know, those are quality. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not trying to go on a super real tangent here, but I don't know. People ask all the time. We fielded on the question on the podcast like 7 trillion times about the reels. And I don't think there's not a bad one in the lot. Even, you know, you get down to your Max, that a Boo Garcia Max 4, pretty killer. I'll say this from a, you know, I was going through like the reels. I've got a shelf here in the bait cave of way too many reels. So, way too many reels.
Yeah, you do.
But, I mean, and like I said, I own them all, from Tranks, the Revos, all this stuff. I think the biggest sleeper, because I was dealing with a little bit of it, and Jay, I didn't even tell you this. You know how we did the reel repair video? If you guys haven't seen that, the Muskie Shop has it up on the YouTube channel. I kind of did this Bush Hillbilly fix where you just sort of, if something screws up on the water or on your big trip, some triage repair.
Right.
So some good little ideas there.
Yeah, there really
is. I literally dealt with a freaking paw issue on that same reel we used in the video, Jay. So,
well, yeah,
I did.
Very common.
Like, oh my God. I jinxed that reel. So I was going through all the guide reels I have on my boat, because the reel in that video is a left-handed Revo Toro beast, but that is that's one of my client lefties, right? So if a client needs it. And I keep a couple of those in my boat, and then the right-handed beast for righties and blah, 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 blah. And I was going through all my reels that I keep just in the boat, and I realized one of the oldest reels that I have in my boat is a Komodo. And I went, I've never done anything to that freaking thing. And it's got to be pushing 6 years old. That's a pretty impressive reel. I'm sorry, I'll shut up about reels, but it's just been on my mind today. But that Komodo, stainless steel gears, all that stuff, not a peep out of it. It doesn't sound bad. It doesn't get funky. Still casts like a champ. And it's not a reel that I'm fishing. It's clients are fishing. And what clients love to do, Jay, sometimes is like you'll be throwing a pounder and they just turn the handle midair. Yep. That's how you stop it, right? Instead of thumbing it, you just turn the handle, right? It sounds like somebody just hit your truck with a T-ball bat. And that's been pretty cool. But whatever. Moving on for reels. It's the Halloween season. Jay, how many razor apples have you given out this week?
Steve, it's not Halloween yet, so there has been no gifts given out. Okay, let's just get it straight.
Halloween is a state of mind in my household. Okay. It's basically the only holiday I celebrate. So
I only give the gift of music.
You give the gift of music. We give the gift every week. Goodness, are you gonna go over and trick or treat at Wally's house though for me? Can you film
that? You know what's going down? I'm getting high speed internet. Finally, Halloween night, baby, 5 o'clock.
Wow, Jay, welcome to the 90s. Congratulations.
Well, it's never been available in Saint Germain in my area until basically last week. So I'm talking true high speed. I'll be able to process videos and not waste my entire day waiting for him to upload. Well,
congratulations.
Hey. It's the little exciting things in my life that add up, okay?
Folks, move to the Northwoods if you want to be a decade behind. Jay just found out about the Black Eyed Peas, so he's on a big kick, folks. He just found out about that. It's a very – what a time to be alive.
It is.
What a Jake! The information everybody wanted to know. When would Jay get high speed internet? Any other personal information you'd like to share on the podcast, Jay?
No, not really.
When's your water bill due?
It fluctuates, Steve.
He's on a rolling blackout schedule.
Have I told you it's cold here?
Don't
you
care.
Told me it was hot today. You went out and you said it's hot.
It's bizarre.
What the heck?
It has been very weird. We got, we were on that downward spiral,
yeah, right?
Of temperatures, and then in the south we just got wham-bastards with some hot temps. We're running a little bit late. Running a little bit hot tonight. Running a little late because I started running in the evenings again. I just couldn't fight it. I was going out in the morning. I was like, nothing's happening. We're getting deep panoptics. Nobody falls. I go, Well, the water temps and the bait fish are saying this is back to summer, and that's exactly it.
It's crazy. I mean,
today was a little bit dicey and a tough bite, but the day before it got like a 51, and it's 9 o'clock at night, pitch black, big blades, you know, and you're just going, it's summer again. So some, you just got to play the hand you're dealt and sort of make an assessment of, over the conditions. But I think that the bottom's about to fall here. So you guys got the cold up there, which is like really, really slow, not slowing things down, but dropping your water temperature, where in the South, it's been a rocket ship back up, where I watched it go from 50s back to way too warm. What are you hearing right now? What are the comings and goings as far as like sucker fishing up there? Because it's kind of the, we're not kind of the time of year. We are well within sucker time. What's the vibe? Are you hearing?
If you can get them, yeah. There's a sucker problem right now. You guessed it. All of a sudden, an instant shortage. We've gotten a lot of rain lately. So
I'll tell you what. If you got high speed internet in the North Woods, you would be in the loop to know there's a sucker shortage.
Family suckers.
Anyway,
remember that outfit? Yeah. So anyway, you know, we're talking, you know, 30s all week for the forecast. So mm-hmm. We've had that for a few days. So yeah, it's cold and it's dropping fast.
What's the vibe
of
people that are coming in and the guides right now? Is it sucker bite? Are they getting? I mean, because I'm not hearing a lot of activity as far as the sucker fishing. It seems like a lot of guys are still getting them on Dive Rise. I mean, Freddie just got a really nice one. A couple different people are scoring on that. What's kind of the vibe? What do you hear?
All the people I talked to, it was the same type bite program as last week. It was, you know, split pretty much 50-50 between live suckers and jerk baits and plastics.
There you go.
That's been the program.
That is the program. Typically is. I mean, where we're looking at what? Okay, mm-hmm. So November's here in a second. It's Halloween!
Yeah.
My favorite time of year. I get to be spooky.
Do you get scared when you fish at night during this time of the year? It's Halloween approaching.
Yes. Actually, you know what?
What?
I'm far too not enough Pepsi'd, so I'm rambling. There's a sound. I'll put it at the end of the podcast.
Ooh.
The other night, it sounded like 1,000 dying coyotes playing kazoos.
It was like the weirdest. Remember when you're at my place and the coyotes just killed a rabbit or something like quarter mile away and you're like, what in God's name is that sound?
Yeah, it doesn't hold a candle to this demonic crap.
No kidding.
Oh, it's the weirdest sound ever. It's like, and it's echoing off the hills. I actually break out the voice memo on my phone. It's like, okay, that sounds like a horror movie. So, no. Yeah. What I'm usually looking for is A, that tweakers aren't stealing stuff out of my car. B, that the Mothman's not there. That's what I'm afraid of at night fishing.
Okay, gotcha.
That's what I'm looking out for.
Just to clear it up.
Anyway, we're going to shut up. We're going to do some spooky. Do you like the way I say spooky? Is it gross and spooky? We'll do some spooky Q&A here just in a minute. The comings and goings of the Muskie Shop, though. The 2024 calendar, we mentioned it before.
Yes.
If you need to know what day it is, that's very helpful. You know, it's got a muskie on it. You'll look at it and you go, how old? This is what day it is.
Original muskie artwork every month.
If you're counting down a prison sentence, take it to prison with you. You can count down to the days. The Kraken is on the way. Sign up if you want the Kraken. And the other one I'm excited about, that Rapala X, the Otis and the Pedo, whatever you want to call it. Those are a coming.
Yeah.
They're a coming any minute now.
Jay, good looking baits. And the Kraken is still, we're hearing rumblings from you and other people that it is just absolutely knocking them dead. I mean, I'm not even going to mention what you got the other day on it.
Yeah. Here's my problem. If that's one I may have said it before. Like, I like coming up with baits, but man, that's one I wish I would have just held on for an extra year. Like, you know, like, hey, let's keep the genie in the bottle on this one. Oh, goodness. But anyway, let's get after it with the Q&A. All right, Hank. Looking for a new muskie boat. What do you guys think is indicative of a good muskie boat? What do I need to be looking for? I fish mainly in Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Ooh, okay. Potential for big water there.
Potential for big water. What makes a good musky boat? It floats. That would be a prereq. Now, you know, been through the process, sort of got my rig and everything dialed in and had a litany of different boats, JUF2, and been on a billion different kind of boats. First and foremost, in my mind, is casting deck, right? So for me, it's like casting deck and tackle storage. Those are like number one and number two. So some of these boats where it's just like, you know, yeah, you might have a big boat, but you have no back deck and you got a narrow front deck or whatever. I want to have a really good front and back casting platform, and then I need tackle storage. So, you know, I've got built in my boat, but in the past I've done stuff with like Joshua Wreck and Rack and all this different stuff. So tackle storage is going to be a pain in your butt no matter what boat you have. So think about that. I don't have like a preference. Obviously I have my, the Steve Paul Lowe musky machine. You know, with that boat, when we sort of dialed that thing in, which is like tackle storage is number two, casting deck number one, tackle is number two, rod storage is number three. Not many boats you're going to be able to store rods. I've got a 14-foot rod locker, which is ridiculous. But if you can find a boat, Jay, what are the bass rod lockers? Are they like 7, 6, 8 foot? Something like that, hence the retractable shield rods.
Yeah, unless they've made major changes recently. That's the problem with going with some of those, because even with 8 foot rods, you know, it's like with yours having that extra length, you can run them both ways.
Well, I just freaking have a pile of them in there, you know.
That's so, right.
So, but, you know, in all reality for me, okay, so Wisconsin, Minnesota gets choppy. It just does. I mean, it's there's not a tree tall enough to block the wind in the entire state is what it feels like. I definitely want something that can handle the chop. I'm talking minimums. I'm not talking like the best case scenario. 16.5 foot, like deep V, you know, if you're looking for that. I was joking about reels about prices of like, you know, everything's just the numbers going up. Look at boats, man. If you're in the market for a boat, it can be terrifying.
Yeah.
So, you know, you didn't give me a price range and I'm not expecting one, but just for anybody that's thinking about a musky boat, you know, 16.5, if it's you and your wife or you and a buddy or you and your son, you know, 16, 17 footer, okay, you're going to be okay. Anything smaller than that's kind of problematic. You can readily get your hands on a deep V. Lun Rebel, I think it is. I don't know if it's, I think it's the Rebel. My buddy Tim from the Netherlands has one of these like just standard deep V Luns. It's a great boat. He's had it in Canada before. He's had it everywhere. It's great. I've had Trackers in the past. They make an 18-foot Tracker. It's a totally serviceable boat. I think with boats like that, you're going to have to do some customization because it's kind of a catch-all, multi-species, walleye, choppy water boat, right? If I'm thinking Minnesota, I need something that can handle bigger water. The consideration between glass and aluminum is a never-ending scenario. We were talking about Rangers earlier, and you're going to pay for a Ranger. Excuse me. Even old ones. That's what drives me nuts. It's like, here's a 1987 Ranger. I want $9,000. Okay, whatever. But these big, heavy fiberglass boats, they set in the water in such a way you're not getting your teeth beat in, right? So with my boat, my boat's pretty light. So if I get in anything bigger than 2 footers, I got to back her down because it's going to be a smack fest, right? You're getting tossed around a little bit, or the nose is coming up and beating around. So aluminum boats, you know, you're going to sacrifice ride, but you're going to save a lot on price. That would be my consideration there. For me, the way things are pricing wise, I don't need to go 50 miles an hour in 3 footers. So that's where my brain's at. The one thing I'd say is this, and I'm just thinking off the top of my head, I get asked about boats all the time on the water. So it's the stuff I just prattle on about all the time. Here's the deal with aluminum. You hit something and you pierce the hull. You could go to a MIG TIG shop or whatever locally, or they can patch it up and you're back in the game for very little. Where if you put a hole in fiberglass, now we're into an entire different animal. So I'm not a big fan of fiberglass just for that. Far fewer transom issues with aluminum than fiberglass. You know, if you get in a transom issue, you're in deep doo-doo. Gets very expensive. Another thing that I consider is this, is some of these fiberglass boats, the gas tank is under the floor, right? So if you're if you have a tank go bad, or heck, the C clamp that connects the hose to your gas tank goes bad, guess what they have to do? Take the rub rail off, pop all the rivets, remove the top of your boat after you've removed your engine and all your hardware, and repair something. So repairs to glass boats are insane for the most minor things. Okay. So aluminum, you have access to things. Let's say, you know, you go to Bass Pro Shops and you buy a tracker, right? You can get and there's not that much of a difference. I'm sorry, but as far as fit and finish, there's a difference, but like a 18-foot tracker, 18-foot Lund, pretty much the same dead rise, pretty much the same beam, pretty much this, pretty much that. Don't care. Whatever. Right. You know, something goes wrong with your fuel system, it's far easier to access than a fiberglass boat. Far easy to modify. One thing I'll say, if you're dealing with aluminum boats, say you're going to build like a casting deck, don't ever build a casting deck or do any wooden modifications. If you're going to build something out, don't do it with pressure treated, because pressure treated wood can interact negatively with aluminum, just because of the creosote in the wood. But you know, some of these 18 footers, you can build. I used to have one where I built a big casting deck all the way up to like the driver's seat, right? So I had this giant casting deck in the front, big casting deck in the back, built a side kind of thing so you could fish 3-4 wide out of that guy. So something can handle, if we're doing Wisconsin, Minnesota, something can handle bigger water. I don't think I've ever been in a boat, Jay, where it's like anything bigger than 3 feet where it's not just terrifying, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, this monstrosity boat, or this idea of some boat that's going to handle 4 footers and you're going to have a great time, I don't care what you're in, it's going to suck and you're not going to have a good time fishing. So think about the economics of the matter. What can I get that I can modify to get the biggest casting deck front and back and the best tackle storage and the best rod storage? That's where I'm at. What would you throw in there?
Well, the thing with aluminum boats, they're a lot more resilient to anytime you pull up on sand or rock, you know.
Yeah.
The fiberglass gets ripped up, again, costly to repair if you can. They're heavier. They're usually more expensive.
Yeah.
And another consideration is what you're pulling this thing with, because if it's a big, if you get something like a 20-foot fiberglass boat, fully loaded, that thing's a monster.
Yeah.
You need a big vehicle, you know, be prepared to, you know, go through, you know, have possible transmission or brake issues too down the road, depending on how old your vehicle is and how many years you run that boat. So, you know, you might need a 250 or something, you know, truck just to pull the thing efficiently.
Yeah.
And if that's not something you own for your everyday, that might be an additional investment.
That's a good point. Cause like, I get asked all the time. So I have my Jeep. I've had it for a hot minute. I have my Trailhawk. I love it. It's got tons of power, 4-wheel drive, all that stuff. And people are like, it can pull that boat. Well, yeah, I've got a freaking gigantic boat and gigantic trailer, but it's aluminum. It doesn't weigh nearly as much as a glass boat. So, I mean, if you ask me, I will personally, I will never own another fiberglass boat. I've had a bunch of them over the years.
And it's personal preference
it's
for
personal
you.
Preference.
And
you
fish
it.
A lot of river systems, and it's perfect for you, and it's
well,
a great boat.
I fish.
And I've driven your rig, and it pulls it great. You know, it's a mid-sized vehicle.
And, well, I fish Canada and Wisconsin and Minnesota, too. So it's not like...
Yeah.
I mean, I've spent plenty of time on the Shield, so I'm not sacrificing enough to make it worth having a bunch of a heavy glass boat.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, you know, I'm getting away from what makes a good musky boat, but just my personal opinion on boats. I've had two boats over the years of guiding that were fiberglass from daily use that developed transom issues, right? It was a nightmare.
Explain the transom issues.
So what happened?
Mm-hmm.
In a fiberglass boat, mm-hmm. in the back where your engine's hanging off, that's your transom. That's the back of the boat.
Right.
When you get water intrusion there, it creates rot. Now you have a weakened transom. So as your engine's pushing, there is flex, there's this, there's that.
Gotcha.
You can look for spider webbing cracks around your engine mount. You can look for spider webbing or leaking around your actual, I love this, the bunghole, Jay.
Ouch.
Right where you put the, what do you put the plug in at night, Jay? The bunghole. What do you take it out of? The bunghole.
The same thing?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Anyway, so that's the actual proper terminology for it, folks.
That's what they say at the marina.
Anyway. In a clinical way, though, very more clinical way. Sir, you have damage to your bunghole.
It's going to cost you.
The guy just comes out and he's wearing scrubs at the marina.
We ain't got no gas.
Folks, you're out of gas, and I hate to tell you, you have a terminal bunghole issue. So, if you ever had leaking around your bunghole, you might you might have transomitis. But, sorry. But I've had the spider webbing and the glass back there to the point of previous vehicles and the previous boat, I won't say what kind of boat it was, I'm pulling up the ramp going 2 or 3 days and I go, man, this is slipping. Am I getting bad tires? And you go, holy crap, the whole transom's taken on water. The boat just gains weight. You know what I'm saying? It just gets heavy.
What a nightmare.
Oh, and what I realized, I look back here and there's a transducer where you screwed the thing in and I went, wonder what happened. I was like, there's got to be water in there. I undid a screw. So I had sealant. If you have glass, you have sealant around your transducers and stuff. Long story short, I took out one of those screws as like a high pressured hose. So, that boat, the one I'm thinking of currently, that glass boat was a nice boat. It still had value if that damage hadn't occurred. It went to the dump. I mean, literally the cost to fix that boat was so in excess of what the boat was worth that it was like, okay, take everything off, take the engine off, dump the boat, keep the trailer, sell the trailer because this thing's just garbage. That's my personal experience with glass. I run a lot, you know. So what makes a good musky boat is the guy's questions. I'll shut up about different boat problems. What makes a good musky boat is a stable platform for the waters you fish. Gentleman I have on the boat right now, right? Mm-hmm. He's from Charleston, unfortunately. I'm from Huntington. It's never-ending feud, but we're talking about the Mud River, and we're talking about Kanawha and some of these different bodies of water. He's got a John boat. That's the perfect body, or perfect boat for the bodies of water he fishes, right? You can get away with a 16, 18-foot John boat and a 9.9 or a 5 or whatever on some of these bodies of water. So Minnesota, Wisconsin, deep V, something stable. Think about tackle storage. That'd be, I'll get off the boat kick. I'm sorry. I like boats, though, Jay. I live in one pretty much.
Yeah, you do.
You know, anyway. Mason, have you fellers ever fished during a good moon phase while a lake is turning over? Well, yeah. Can't say that had any bearing. I love Booker's take on turnover, right? if a lake's turning over, go somewhere else, which is like a total Northwoods thing. Yeah, I mean,
it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. As a matter of fact,
I have him heard him say that. Yeah.
Don't fight it. Go where it's not happening. As far as the moon phase thing, I mean, talk about some existential crisis where you're going, well, is it this or is it that, or what's going to trump this or what's going to trump that? I think turnover regardless, or moon phase regardless, or whatever, in the fall, everything's about weather, right? And if you get the right weather, you can get the bite. I think when we start stacking that many factors, right? So, is it a good moon phase during turnover and we have great weather or bad weather? It's too convoluted. So, yes, I've fished during a good moon phase during turnover, and Jay has too. And is there a magic trick? No, it just depends on what's happening climactically more so than anything. So there's not a big takeaway from that other than you can't really blame it on the moon, or they can't blame it on the turnover. You got to blame it on all three above, and then it's a real weird shooting match. And if I see the turnover happening, Jay, back to the Bucharism, what am I doing? Putting her on the trailer. Yeah, get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, on the other hand, there is situations where, you know, especially with a very clear lake, if that lake is turning over, unless it's absolutely catastrophic, there could be a situation, and I've seen, and I've actually heard about it more than I've seen, where people have gone out and it's like, holy crap, fish are shallow right now.
Right.
You know, and you're on during that window. Yeah. They're shallower than normal, and they're more catchable. So as far as moon phases during this period of time, the late fall period, quite often that is going to coincide with, you know, catching fish of a lifetime too. So, mm-hmm. you know, we're into that time of the year, especially in the Northwoods, right, where the full moon and the new moon are probably going to produce some fishes of a lifetime type catches, PBs, big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Conrad, I feel like I have a good collection of casting lures, but don't know where to start when it comes to the acquisition of trolling lures. I'm in a single rod state. Should I just bite the bullet and get a headlock, or what do I need to have a well-rounded trolling setup? Hey, I think we've talked about something like this last week in some capacity.
Yeah, just thinking that somewhere. Right.
Yeah, I think we talked about headlocks and depth raiders and reef diggers and grandmas, which is a prereq. A well-rounded trolling collection. We need depth, size, and action at speed. Those are our three thoughts, right? So, do we have deep runners? Do we have shallow runners? Mid runners? Mid deep, right? Because there's a consideration there. So, you know, do we have big lures that will run at 5 feet, small lures that will run at 5 feet, small lures that will run at 20 feet? You see what I'm saying? Like, cover the entire water column up and down with your small, medium, large. Is it necessary to start off there? No, but I like to have a selection that allows me to have small, mid, large, mid, shallow, deep. You see what I'm saying? So, like, when I think
yeah,
of like
yeah, a, two lures aren't going to do it,
right?
You know, if you
right,
want a well-rounded.
Right. So, you know, the cool thing with headlocks or matlocks is you can run them shallow, mid, deep because the line mm-hmm. setting and where they run. So those are my big lures, right? My big lures off the rip are those. My shallow size mid lures would be grandmas, and then we go to like a tough shad, and then so cover your size spectrum and cover your depth spectrum. Once you have that covered, you're kind of complete, and we're just kind of adding from there, right? You can add flavor as you go,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, cover that top to bottom and small to big. That would be my concept And you can do that in a litany of ways. You know, you could forgo headlocks and matlocks and go 13-inch grandmas are far cheaper, right? You know, does that seem logical, Jay, as a way to tackle that? I mean, it's not about what brand it is. It's just like the application. You know, you could, instead of getting Death Raiders, you could get Cisco Kids or you could get Livingston Strikers or whatever.
Yeah, for the price of a headlock. I mean, headlocks and matlocks obviously are amazing lures. And if you're a serious troller, you got to use them. But if you wanted that Steve Paul method that you were just talking about, and we kind of discussed this last week too, and you said it wouldn't be my first choice. If you're on a budget and you want, you know, you want the coverage, you need a shallow, you need a mid, and you need some deep running lures in a couple different sizes. So,
and then,
you know, you can get into a lot of those, like you're mentioning Depth Raiders and grandmas and 8-inch Jakes and stuff like that, you know, $25 or less. So,
right. And like I said, I mean, if we've covered shallow, mid, deep, now we need to cover big, shallow, medium, shallow, small, shallow, big, mid, small, big, mid, down the line, right? So three options for each running depth. That's a pretty good collection.
Yeah.
And it might be, again, the reason I said the headlock, you might be able to get it with a headlock, which is your big bait for all of them, or a true deep thing like the Reef Digger, which I look at Reef Diggers as the same kind of awesomeness as a headlock, right? The big fork. Well, how big's the big Reef Digger, Jay? 12 inches or something like that?
Oh, the real big. Yeah, he's got a few made. Yeah, it's like a 12-inch bait. Yeah.
You know, that's a Cadillac. It's a great bait. And, you know, you need one of them and you can freaking get that thing down there and grind it 25 feet if you want. So,
yeah.
That's sort of my concept for that. Sam, things are getting cooler down south. What's the deal regarding seasonality? Should I be looking deeper in October, November? Are fish going to move shallow like they do up north? Thanks for all you do on the podcast. Water temps everything. So, you're not going to deal with turnover in the south, right? The only turnover you might deal with down here is an apple turnover, Jay.
But, or a cherry.
Or a cherry at the down at the Arby's. Got the cherry turnover. What will happen, dependent on weather, as always, the giant caveat of muskie fishing. Mid-October, these things will push up shallow, and then they'll start looking at that mid-depth break late October, November. Then you get hit stuff with stuff like this, Jay, where it's Indian Summer 4.0, right? And we're back to the mid-80s or low 80s, and we go back. So it can be a push-pull endeavor. Goodness, what is it? It all blurs together. Like, 2 weeks ago, I was slaying on topwater, and then I was fishing krakens, and now I'm back to, like, topwater and blades and shallow cranks, right? So let the current conditions, your read on the water tell you what to do. You're going to do the same thing that's happening up north. You're going to have a shallow push, and you're going to have a push out to that outside break. Just keep an eye on the conditions. You know, anywhere into that mid-November in the south, you can find that nasty shallow bite. But watch your front. It's all going to be frontal movement. We were talking just a couple weeks ago, Jay, about how, like, just how much of a tight wire routine it is, or where it's like at any moment that bite up north could fall apart, but it's that magical shallow water bite, right? Where Joe's doing on the tactical podcast, we're talking about get out there, do it. This is the best time of the year. It's magic. You have the same thing in the south, but you just have to keep your ear to the ground. And by ear to the ground, I mean your iron electronics and your brain going what's actually happening and making an assessment to really be smart about what's taking place. So you can't let it rest on your laurels in the capacity of the calendar says this or the calendar says that. There is a potential for a phenomenal shallow water bite, and it diminishes the later we go. But watching conditions and watching frontal movements will sort of dictate what's taking place there. So it's the same thing up north as it is down here. Mr. Smith. I didn't know, Jay, are you into the whole brevity thing? Are we calling people Mr. now?
No.
Okay. Smith, just finished your book and loved it. Two questions. Will there be a follow-up book? Yes. I am just finishing, Jay, as we speak.
Really? I didn't know that. Are you really?
Next Level Musky Fishing 2, The Erotic Awakening.
That's the title I was looking for.
It is. And it really, the you know, if you thought the first book had a sexual undertone, this one it's heightened.
Okay.
No, I haven't finished the other book yet. Literally, the ink's still drying on the first one. But
got to work on the audiobook first.
Well, I'm slated. No publisher demands. I've got another. I will do another, but man, that is an undertaking to get it right. Yes, there'll be another book. Is it going to be tomorrow? Absolutely not. But thank you so much for the support. I so many people have bought that thing. It sort of blew my mind. Thank you, guys. But yeah, that's a labor of love, and I will work on it shortly.
Do a sellout second one.
What?
You know? Do a sellout for the second one. Just, you know, pump something up, sophomore, you know, type deal with, you know, like Muskie's The Coloring Book, you know.
Right. Don't like really try.
Right. That's what I'm getting.
Yeah,
I like, you know.
It. Yeah. It's
okay.
Just like,
thanks.
Everything you needed to know about Muskie's in 14 words. And you, yeah, exactly. It's a pamphlet more than a book. Now, I've still got some chapters already done. Okay. We'll see. It's time. Time is the enemy. You know, time is the culprit that just dictates everything. And
our time is running out.
Well, ticking away the moments that make up a dull day.
Muse.
Well, that was a Pink Floydism I just hit you with there, Muse Boy.
Yeah, I hit you with Muse Boy.
No one cares, Jay.
I know.
Anyway, yeah, I'll work on another one here shortly.
Okay.
If you're Jones and just read it again or read it backwards. The question I have when you're talking about the 3-point check for forage in the book, do you do the same check locations all season long? Ooh, I like that. Where I'm at, yes, because I have so many variables. So if you don't know what he's referring to, I do something every day, unbeknownst to most, where I'm checking 3 key locations for the staging of forage and allows me to know if they're mid, shallow, and deep. So if forage is deep, it is mid, it is shallow, I can sort of extrapolate on experience and note-taking where muskie should be staged. So yes, where I'm at, I do it in the same 3 locations daily. There could be an argument made for up north that you could possibly move things out deeper, right, throughout the course of a season. Or you could sort of forgo the actual shallow, and I mean shallow like as far as shallow topography check, and look for shallow suspended bait for a trolling thing. Typically, once you've done this enough, let's say that you do it all next year, you become a diligent note taker and you do your shallow mid deep check every trip, you may not need to expand that search once you've sort of started to draw corollaries from that, right? So don't overthink it. Just find 3 key locations that are going to pop off when you need them to. But yeah, you might need to tweak. Just depends on the body water on. All right, Jason B. Oh my God. I hate all my lures.
Ooh.
I like how we're starting here. I hate all my lures. Do you ever feel this way? I have a ton of gear and I can't catch a muskie on any of it. Should I burn it? Should I sell it? Should I buy all new stuff? What am I doing wrong? What do you think, Jay? Should he just burn all his tackle?
No, of course not. Everything's got a time and a place. And that's part of his problem. More than likely is just wrong bait, wrong time. Mm-hmm. Wrong application, wrong presentation.
Wrong bait, long time.
You get in a groove, you're going to love those baits.
Me throw you long time. Me throw you wrong time. Sorry.
Huh.
What?
Yeah, okay.
Me throw you wrong time.
Huh?
That's my next book, dude. Me throw you wrong time, and I just tell you when the right time to throw the right bait is.
Sounds like a new song.
So, yeah, there's a time and a place. There's a season for everything.
Well, yeah.
I don't even know what that's referencing something. So we need to take our tackle box. We need to lay it out. We need to organize it seasonally and conditionally, right?
Yeah, good point.
What are my summer baits? Okay, are you heavily loaded? Are you front end loaded on blades and bucktails? You know, blades, bucktails. I said blades and bucktails, blades and topwater. Are most of your presentations shallow? And we're in the fall season, you're not contacting fish, or you know, are you diversified? Jay, are you diversified in your tackle?
I'd like to think so, Steve. Okay. Thanks for asking.
Diversification. Amen. You just want to make sure that you have conditionally and seasonally appropriate bait selections readily available and sort of assess what the application of each bait you have is. So get it out, lay it out, and go, these are my bucktails, and they are mainly for warmer conditions, and here's my top water, and here's my dive rise, and here's my crankbaits, and here's my, and in crankbaits, we, you know, is it mid shallow deep? Here's my rubber baits, are they mid shallow deep? And looking at that nature, and really don't look at it as a tackle box full of awesome lures. Go, what are the tools and what are the jobs I'm trying to do? Do I have the tools for every job I need to possibly take care of on the water? Do I have the tools for any situation I might encounter? Don't think mm-hmm. about color, right? Don't get into this crazy color thing. Just make sure that you have appropriate tools for the jobs you're gonna face. Break it down that way. You might find that, hey, you know, I've got a ton of and these are all great baits. I have a ton of crankbaits, right, Jay? And I've seen this before. Man, I've got a ton of crankbaits, but I'm not catching fish on them, right? And it's nothing but slammers and cranes. Well, guess what's not going to really do a lot of good when we're getting close to ice up and things of that nature? Shallow running cranks or blades or topwaters, right? Do we have a good selection of deep running crankbaits or mid-depth running crankbaits, okay? So assess what the application is for everything that you have and look for gaps in your game, fill it in as necessary, and learn to apply them appropriately. All right. Yep. Ben, I fish mainly a medium-sized lake in southern Wisconsin with moderate pressure. Right now, I can't seem to get a bite on a sucker. I've soaked tons of them. I've spent more money on suckers than I care to say with no catches. Muskies will follow up my baits, but they won't eat any suckers. Any hot sucker tips? Jay's new book is called Hot Sucker Tips. What do you think, Jay?
I think I might be using them a little bit early down there. I was talking to a buddy that fishes down there. He got out like three times on a southern Wisconsin lake last week, and uh-huh. water temps are still fairly warm. Too warm, really, pre-turnover. So break out the suckers, what, coming up later this week?
Uh-huh.
I heard it's only supposed to be highs in the 30s in southern Wisconsin, too. So should get the water temps down closer to 50 and mm-hmm. Maybe get some things rocking there. And it'll be more appropriate temperature-wise for a you know cold water sucker bite.
There's also, too, I mean, how big's your sucker? How big, Jay?
Well, we were consistently selling out of the super XL size mm-hmm. versus, you know, like the more commonly appropriate, say, 12-inch, 13-inch models.
Right.
You know, people were going for these monster 18s and 19s, and those were getting picked out pretty quick uh-huh. every time we got suckers in. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know. And this was, swinging, you know, a week plus ago.
Swinging for the fences, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. That, I mean, but, you better be on fence swinging water.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, don't take your 19-inch sucker to Wildcat. So,
right.
You know, we've talked about that before, is don't go and buy live bait and pick out a pet. You know, if you're on a body of water, you know, realistically, there might be 250s in this thing, right? But it's action water, and you catch, all summer long, you've caught nothing but 34s and 36s, right, Jay? Don't take the 19-inch sucker out there. You know, get you a moderate-sized sucker. We just did the sucker video that came out. I talk about application of the appropriate size live bait for the class of water you're fishing, right?
Moderation, Steve.
Moderation. As much as I love, I'm sitting here, hold on, here in the bait cave, I have this Toothy Tough that Dan at Toothy Tough made me. I do believe this is a 2.5-pounder, Jay.
That one I gave you, yeah.
No, this is one
he... Yeah, remember that?
He mailed this one to... This is bigger
than
that
one. You stole it from the office.
No, I didn't, Mr. Dipshitticus. This is big. This is way bigger than that one. This thing... I just knocked a Titan down.
Uh-oh.
This thing is ridiculous. And I go, I'm saving it for the day that a basking whale follows in. You know, as much as I want to throw it, you go, whoa. You got to do it on the right water. You know, I'm not doing that in a small creek or something of that nature. So, again, back to, we were just talking about tackle box. Well, the appropriate application, the same thing with suckers. Don't take XL suckers to action water. Maybe this guy's not doing that. Maybe it's just the temperature gradient. If I'm getting follows and they're just not committing to the sucker, it could be sucker placement as well. Make sure we're leading directly into the sucker. Make sure that we're setting that sucker at the level of light penetration.
Yep.
Right? So if you're getting follows on jumbo baits, and this is what I've always sort of thought, everyone is going to be throwing big rubber that knows what's going on, right? So we're throwing mag dogs and we're throwing, you know, we're throwing freaking Medusas, right? And they're not hitting those, but we bring them into the boat and we present them with an even bigger presentation. Ah. Yeah,
good point.
Why are we throwing a mag dog and they're not hitting that, but we confront them with something even bigger? Yeah. How about we have something slightly smaller than what we're throwing boatside? That's always been my take. It works all year long. Why won't it work during sucker season? Glenn, what are the best times to head down south for a winter break? I'm sick of the snow, and the south is where I want to go for muskies. Best time. It can really vary.
I would say when season closes in northern Wisconsin until it opens.
Until it opens. My favorite time is February. That's just my personal favorite time. You know, again, we can throw jumbo baits. We can catch them on pounders. We can catch them on suckers. We can do this. We can do that. That seems to be my favorite because, you know, yeah, it's the dead of winter, but it's like tropical for you guys. You know, it's way warmer here than it is there, but you sort of start getting that kind of seasonal pressure, really short days, really short periods of light. Everything's truncated. You know, it's just like by the time you hit the middle of the day, you're geared up for sunset. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like, short periods, muskies got to do something. They have a very short period to eat. That's my favorite is February. Fred, does gear ratio matter when choosing a line counter reel? Jay, you know, you're a savant of line counter reels. What do you think? Does gear ratio matter?
I like to think it does. It's been more important to me lately than it has been in the past because I can't stand those unbelievably slow gear ratio line counter reels where you're trying to pick up slack and catch the running muskie as soon as you set the hook. You know, right. 4-1 to 1. Are you kidding me?
That's what I have, baby. They're awful.
We actually had a podcaster
bring up how awful my line counters are. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Remember that? I'm left-handed. Sorry.
Yeah, there's less options.
There's less options.
They're making some 6.2s, so they pick up line up real quicker. Yeah, there's a few of them, you know, some Akumas and Shimanos and what else? Daiwa. I think Daiwa's got a high-speed one now, so we're trying to get our hands on all the high-speed ones we can when they become available.
I don't think necessarily for fighting a fish, not so much, but just getting stuff in, too.
It's annoying.
It is. I can have 40 feet of line out and you feel like you're fighting forever. And just reeling. So to get your spread of trolling lines in, it's quicker. That's really the only merit. I mean, once you get a fish on, but like you said, if I've lost them where we hit him trolling, bam. You know, you put the boat in neutral, and now he's coming towards you. And to pick up on him is kind of a pain in the butt. So
yeah, and they all have small handles, too. Wish they'd make them with big handles.
Well, if you want those Akumas that are 1-to-1, it's literally just a spool line with a handle. they have big handles, though. You can turn your little brains out. Anyway, goodness gracious. Eric, I want to go on a trip to Canada this coming summer. I've never been, but I wanted to talk about I want you to talk about what things do we need to know if we're heading to Canada for the first time. Suggestions for a newbie are appreciated. Love the podcast. Meow. First time in Canada. Number one, make sure you have your passport in order, right? Don't go to the border with no passport. You have to have one to cross the border to Canada, okay? Some people know that. Some people don't. Get that taken care of. I believe, and do not quote me on this, and do not complain if you get turned away, but I believe if you've had a DUI in the last decade, you can't get in unless you do some Canadian rehabilitation, which is essentially paying a fine. That's a deal. People get turned away all the time for minor weird stuff. So make sure your house is in order first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
As far as first time to go into Canada, do not go to a Canadian Shield Lake and think you're going to drive around and not wreck your boat. Thank you. Good night. Okay. You might get away with it on Lake of the Woods because there's enough mapping. You're not going to get away with it on Eagle. You're not going to go with it on Wabagoon. And you're not going to get away with it on Locksoul. Okay? So this is not freaking some inland lake. This is not, you know, some... The way I got to put it is this. What you're looking at on the shoreline has nothing to do with what's subsurface. These are glacial lakes. They have the glacier shoved boulders this way and moved bedrock that way. What is the shoreline does not belie what is subsurface. Okay. So don't think you're going to go up here and zip around. I've seen it. I've seen the fiberglass floating around. I've seen the Ranger sinking with guys that thought they knew what they were doing. If you go in humble and realize you're absolutely neophyte, your first trip up there, you'll make it back with your entire engine and most of your boat. Okay? The adage in Canada is not if, it is when. You're going to wreck your boat. Right? You're going to take a lower unit off. You're going to lose your prop. It is going to happen. So, these are things you need to have in your head. Don't be scared, but don't go in there and go, I'm going to learn a route, and then I'm going to blaze around a Canadian Shield. Like, you are not going to. It is not going to end well. Okay? And maybe, Jay, I've seen these guys. They got away with it one summer, right? And next summer, the water's down 6 inches. They're ripping stuff up shreds. Go in humble. Go in I need to learn the route. So, first time in Canada, first time on, let's say, a Shield Lake, we need to hire a guide, right? Does it have to be a musky guide? No. Can it be a walleye guide? Can it freaking be a tour guide? You need to have someone show you routes to navigate this waterway, right? Preferably a musky guide. They'll show where muskies are. You need routes, okay? First and foremost. There are not great lakes or great maps of these lakes, and there's tons of hazards. I was just telling a guy on the boat the other day. He was like, oh, is that bad? With it? He asked, like, we've talked about it. I'm not trying to oversell it. You say that these lakes are dangerous and all this stuff. Are people not marking it? There are not jugs. There's not a floating buoy on this stuff, right? Nobody's going out there at the beginning of the year and going, hey, let's mark these reefs. No one cares. You know, navigate your own risk. You know, this is not some community lake with lake houses on it. So be prepared for that. Something else to be prepared for. You need to have ton of tackle on hand, right? You need to be able to prepare your tackle. Just like we did that video. I'm not plugging it. But the stuff I pulled off in that video we just did on rod and reel repair was from going to Canada so many times, and there is nowhere to get things fixed, and there is nowhere to buy something else. So we need to have a good tool assortment. Never go up there. You better have, if you have a dual axle trailer, take two trailer tires. So you got two on the trailer and two extra, right? You better take extra gear, extra reels. Do not go to Canada without backup of everything, okay?
Yeah.
The other thing I recommend is if you go up there, have a build a bait box. And what I mean by that is like sort of like Jay, you've seen the box I keep in my boat where it's like 40 bucktail skirts, tons of bucktail wire, tons of hooks.
Oh, that box.
Yeah, that box. I can build basically whatever you want on the waterway. You might get dialed in and it is a 700 Booker tail yellow bucktail.
Head be yellow. Oh, here
and
you go.
And that's what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Have parts and pieces. Be ready to build baits. Be ready to repair baits. You're not going to, and I've seen it. You got, let's, most guys' trips, Jay, are Saturday to Saturday, right? And they go up there and they're finally get their bearings by Tuesday. And these fish are on bait X, Y, and Z. And they got two of them. And either it's a wooden bait or a crankbait, and they're demolished, and they got no extra hooks, they got no extra this, and they're out of the game, or it's bucktails or whatever. Have your repair stuff on hand.
Hey, right. And back up for 1 second, too, if you could. Tell folks, I mean, the average amount of miles you put on going from spot to spot in an average day on these big bodies of water.
Oh.
And why that's important about, you know, being careful. You know what I mean? Because we're talking miles. I'm not talking covering acres.
No, it's... You know, if you've never been, and again, I say all this stuff, hold on, my seat's creaking here. I'm not saying this about Canadian Shield Lakes to dissuade you from going. I'm telling you the brutal, honest truth, right? Of, I mean, my great guy, love fishing with him, Gary Orman, you know, good buddy here. He's fished with me for a lot of years. He took his dad up this year and they went to AML, right? And he's trying to explain to him how dangerous it is to run around. And they pull in, and here are two guide boats that are up on the docks with ripped off lower units, right? Guide boats. People that run the lake all the time. Just two people that day or that week wrecked their lower units. Okay? It's not because of negligence. It's not because of this. It is dicey. Okay, or people, I've seen it before, you know, they go and book a room at a place at X, Y, and Z Lodge, and they go, show me a map of the lake, and here's some paper map, and it's got this, that, or this, that, and that, and that, and this on it, and here's the hazard map. And by lunchtime, they've wrecked their boat, right? Hubris is dangerous, especially in that scenario. You don't have a good map. You don't have a good map chip, and you don't know it all. I drive around Canada like a schmuck, If I am even questioning my route, I'm going 5 miles an hour until I get it down. I've been up there since I was six, and I'm 42. You can't underestimate it. My joke on Eagle Lake is the rocks move at night. Wobegoon, the thing's stained. You're going to wreck your boat. You don't know your way around that one. Lock Sewell, you're going to wreck your boat and die, and no one will find you until next year. Okay? And Lake of the Woods, you're just going to rip your lower unit off and float around until somebody finds you.
Halloween Stories with Steve.
I'm just telling it like Scared Straight with Stephen. Oh, sorry, I'm just shitting on everybody's Canadian dreams. But that's the facts, okay? So if you're on the Shield Lakes, be conscientious of that. What you need to look at is supplying yourself with baits. There's nothing up there. There's a couple places. If you're on a bite, you might be able to find this, that, and the other. You're not going to find what you need. Always take two nets. Always take, if you can afford it, take an extra prop. Never run a stainless steel prop in Canada. Always take an aluminum prop and take a backup prop for that. I recommend a skeg guard if you can get it, if you can afford it. Always, always, always take a backup trolling motor prop because you're going to hit a rock. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I go up there, it's like Beverly Hillbillies, okay? What I like to do on my boat, if Jay, you've been on my boat a million times, you guys seen the video. At my console, I have double stacked screens, right? So I have two big screens at my console. They're reciprocal. And I always recommend if you're going to Canada, have a reciprocal navigational system. So if you lay down your trails, and you always have to be laying trails down. So if I've ran from point A to point B and point A to, or point B to point A back, and I've not killed myself, I have a relatively good path. I want to be sharing those waypoints between two screens. So I've seen fish finders go out and now you're just out of luck, right? And the art of triangulating between spots is long gone. That's how I navigate Eagle, by the way. As I look at the shoreline and go, oh, there's that tree that looks like an alligator. I'm going to run this way and then here about 40 yards, I'm going to turn left, right? That's a long gone art, but that's how I do Eagle. You need trails. You're asking, sorry, Jay, I'm on a tangent here, but you're asking about like distances. Oh, God, freaking, we could run 35 miles in a day. Easy. This is not, you know, hopping around your local lake. So
yeah.
Be prepared for a big gas bill. Be prepared for long runs. And, like, you know, you could be stranded. That's another thing. And this guy's question was probably like, what bait should I take? Don't care about the baits as much as, be prepared for anything. When I go to Canada in my boat, I have a fire starter. I have, you know, the space blankets, Jay?
I was just going to say, like food, water, and a sleeping bag or something.
In
my
boat, I have three MREs. I have space blankets, and I have a fire starter, and I have a flare gun. Every time. Won't leave without them. And you could go, dude, you could go out, and it's like, oh, they, you know, you're 10 minutes from camp and there's no one around and your boat broke down. Me and my dad one time got water and gasoline, our gas. I was a kid and it clogged the reed valves on old two-stroke. Yeah. We were stuck. We were outside on Eagle Lake. Wolves are howling. The mosquitoes are everywhere. And we had an MRE, and we got under some blankets and toughed it out, and a walleye boat towed us in the morning. Thank God they came by, right? But you can't underestimate. Don't underestimate how wild it is. As far as the fishing, man, yeah, it's the best there is. So the caveat is be prepared, be smart about what we're doing. And a rejoinder on this, I'm not trying to harp. Dude, say you go to Andy Myers, right? And this happens all the time. You go to Andy Myers and Herbeck's there, and he says, well, just stay in Myers Bay today and check this out and follow these routes. every freaking time people are like, they're trying to keep us off the fish, we got to go further, and they wreck their boat. No one, there's so many fish up there, nobody's trying to keep you off the fish. They're trying to keep you safe, right? So don't be arrogant, don't be dumb about it, and learn the right routes, the right ways. Have your backup stuff. Never go up there. I've seen guys show up there and they show up with one rod and one reel. Don't do that. Show up with tons of baits. I don't know. I could go down the rabbit hole. We should probably do it. You know what? I'll get Herbeck on at some point this winter. It'd be a good winter show, sort of just talk about first time to Canada crap. He's going to tell you a lot of the same thing, but we could talk about like baits and the seasonality. You know, because July is different than August, September is different. Awesome, yeah.
Yeah. How to truly plan for your trip. Right.
How to plan for it. Jody did a killer article I loved on the Muskie Shop blog, which is totally her take on it, where she said the over planner's guide to Canada. Because we actually do, every time we're going up there, no matter the duration of the trip, we're actually looking like kind of like planning for meals and planning to pick this up because. You know, say you're going to Andy Myers Lodge, you're going to hang out with me on Wabagoon or Grenlochsel. You know, you're going to have to stop in Kenora for Lake of the Woods or Dryden for the rest of them, right? You got to get everything you need right in one go. There's no like leaving frickin' Sioux Outlook to our Sioux Outpost to come into town and get a Snickers bar. You know, you have to plan accordingly for the entire week. What will we need? So, you know, if you're doing, I mean, it might sound crazy to people. There's some of us that do 2 months, or there's some people that do a month or 2 weeks. So you got to plan accordingly and think ahead. Anyway, I love that stuff. Jerry, remind me, we should do like that Canadian like planning thing. I know it's goofy, and then we can talk about seasonality. But
that could be a very, very cool winter episode for sure.
Anyway, Jay,
yeah,
what did you carve in your pumpkin this year?
I put Jim, the Tube Screamer Stewart's, you know, an artist rendition of his face. And then he's given a thumbs up sign and he's got a tube in his left hand and it's frightening. Mm-hmm. And you put a candle in there and it lights up and it's kind of welcoming and scary at the same time is what I'm getting at.
Gross. Good night, folks.
Muskie.